Well, when Monsignor Stetzel asked me to preach this Sunday and I looked at the readings, I told him that I'd found the Amos prophecy and Jesus' story of Lazarus always very challenging. I was tempted to preach from the gospel, but I know that he's, for this last few months, has been preaching from the second reading. He told me it was okay if I wanted to preach from the gospel, but in the end, I promised I'd preach primarily on this second reading. Well, I was pleasantly surprised this week in preparing to see a strong connection between the words of Paul and his message and those of Amos and Jesus. All three proclaim the same message. Pursuing material riches can easily lead us astray and prevent us from pursuing the true riches that God desires for us. Well, because we don't often preach from the second reading, I'm going to try to briefly review what Monsignor taught 2 weeks ago about 1 Timothy. The letter is one of the New Testament books categorized as the pastoral epistles. These letters aren't intended to be deep works of theology as Romans and Hebrews are. Rather, they're written as guides for first century Christians on how to live virtuously. Paul explains this to Timothy in the third chapter of this letter, and these words are worth listening to. I am writing these instructions to you so that you may know how one ought to behave in the household of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and bulwark of the truth. Great indeed, we confess, is the mystery of our religion, that Jesus was manifested in the flesh, vindicated by the Spirit, seen by angels, preached among the nations, believed on in this world, and taken up in glory. As the church father Irenaeus explained in the second century, our faith's great mystery is this: the Son of God became man in order that we might become sons and daughters of God. Because of this divine exchange, all of us, the baptized, are enabled to live in a manner pleasing to the Father. The pastoral letters remain relevant because they serve as good guideposts on how we are to do that. Well, to show you how useful they are, I want to focus on just the first words of our second reading. But you, man of God, pursue righteousness, devotion, faith, love, patience, and gentleness. Paul's imperative is that we pursue these virtues. Well, you can't make much of an argument about his request that we do so. Saying a contrary word about these virtues would be like getting up here and critiquing Mom, apple pie, and the Green Bay Packers. Well, there's a danger in simply extolling these virtues in the homily, and that is that my words could easily soothe us into a complacency that our first reading from Amos and our gospel reading about the poor man Lazarus precludes. The words of the prophet and Jesus are harsh. They're intended to shock us, to challenge those of us who have been abundantly blessed to meet the needs of the poor among us. So if you leave here today and someone asks you to summarize what I've said in this homily and your answer is this, he told us to be nice to each other, I've failed. The key to connecting Amos's prophecy and Jesus's warning to Paul is to consider the three words that were left out of this first reading, or the second reading. And the United States Conference of Bishops gives us the lectionary, but there are three words in this Bible verse, the 11th verse from the 6th chapter of 1 Timothy, that are excluded. I'm going to read it again with those words included. But you, man of God, avoid all of this. Well, what is it that Paul wants Timothy to avoid and to tell the people of Ephesus that they need to avoid this? What is he pleading with them to avoid? These verses before the reading today explain that. Paul says, there is great gain in godliness with contentment. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we shall be content. All that we have here and that we've been given, our material possessions, our families, our very lives, every day, hour, and heartbeat of our lives has been given to us by God. Our response should be gratitude and praise. As the refrain from the beautiful 18th century German hymn proclaims, all good gifts around us are sent from heaven above. Then thank the Lord, oh, thank the Lord for all his love. When we face Jesus at the end of our lives, hopefully we'll not speak like a plaintiff before an earthly judge. Judge, I gave to the children's hospital every year. I didn't swear, well, very much. I was a good friend to my friends. Overall, I was a pretty good guy or gal. Hopefully, we'll be praising him and thanking him for all that he's given us. What do we need on this earth? For earthly happiness, that our simple needs be met, but more importantly, that we have strong human relationships, love, a community to grow up in. For eternal happiness, this is the gift that he's given us through the death of his son, through the Eucharist, his gift that he promises to all of his disciples in order that we may be with him in heaven forever. These are indeed great gifts. The 9th and 10th verses immediately preceding what we've just read, but those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and hurtful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced their hearts with many pangs. Money in and of itself is not the problem. What Paul wants us to shun is the desire, the craving, the love of money. How true, and here's the hook. Far too often, the more we have, the more we desire. The more we possess, the more we obsess about holding on to what we have. Like the rich of Amos's day, who were indifferent to the poor and sought only their own pleasure, the greedy farmer of Luke 12, who hoarded his wealth by building larger and larger barns, or the rich man in today's gospel, who day after day refused to give Lazarus even the scraps that fell from his table. If we are anxious about increasing and holding on to our material possessions, we can too easily ignore the cry of the poor. When he was hungry, did we feed him? When a stranger, did we welcome him? When naked, did we clothe him? When in prison, did we visit him? Do we love God above all things and our neighbors as ourselves? The verses that follow today's reading, verses 17 and 19, Paul gives advice to Timothy, the pastor, that he wants him to pass on to the rich. As for the rich in this world, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on uncertain riches, but on God who richly furnishes us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good deeds, liberal and generous, thus laying up for themselves a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of the life which is life indeed. We've all seen the news reports. The tornado or natural disaster ravages a family's home, destroying it down to its foundation. The reporter interviews the mom or the dad and asks what I think is somewhat of a dumb question, how do you feel? Well, fortunately, often we hear a profound answer. We lost everything, but thank God none of us were hurt. We have each other. And I would add, and hopefully you have your neighbor's support, God surely still has you in his hands. Brothers and sisters, we can't take it with us, not a single thing. Do we value that which is most valuable in this life, our family, our friends, our community? Do we prize that which is most valuable in the next life, God's gift to us, that will enable us to dwell in his house forever. I want to end with just a few thoughts and ways of challenging that we might challenge ourselves. Those of us who have been blessed with a stable family, a fine education, rewarding job, excellent health, and a healthy savings account need to be asking ourselves, am I worrying about my investment's performance more than my neighbor in need? Am I generous? Am I grateful? Well, there are others of you who are probably saying right now, Deacon, what you just said doesn't apply to me. I'm struggling to make ends meet working on my job. My marriage just ended, and I can't afford school supplies for the kids this year. My health is not good. I depend entirely on my Social Security check, and I can't afford all my medications. Yeah, it's tough. But I ask those of you who are thinking that, and really all the rest of us, to remember this. God has also given us the gift of time. Am I generous with my time, using it wisely? Could I be helping the young family next door by watching their kids tomorrow afternoon rather than playing video games on my computer? For remember, not all poverty is material, relieved by money. Some poverty is only helped by a kind deed, a smile, or a touch. For those of you who, because everything in your life has been going poorly, identify most with Lazarus, it may be impossible to be content. Perhaps God doesn't intend you to be. If you have a pressing need, perhaps God desires you to dispossess you of your pride. Perhaps you are to be like Lazarus, Christ in disguise, and sit in front of your neighbor's door every day so that he knows your name and your need. Through Lazarus, God gave the rich man plenty of chances to accumulate true riches by becoming rich in good works and ready to share. Just perhaps he's calling you to do that for your neighbor. One final thought, and that's for all the parents out here with children, especially young children. Preparing for this homily, I thought of something that happened about 25 years ago when my dad and I were taking our two young sons to a St. Louis Cardinals ball game in St. Louis. They were probably going to go play the Brewers and beat them. I don't remember that. What I do remember is that as we approached the stadium, in one of the underpasses to the stadium was a man who was begging. He was wearing tattered clothes. He's sitting there asking for money. Well, my boys had money in their pockets that they were going to spend on maybe some memorabilia or a bag of popcorns or something like that. My youngest son, Douglas, immediately went up to the man and emptied his pockets and put it in his can. Well, right away, my dad and I are thinking, well, that guy's just probably going to spend it on alcohol, or maybe he's drug addicted, maybe this isn't the wisest thing. But luckily, I think we held back. We didn't admonish him. And I really hope that as young parents, you never, when your kids are generous and want to give to Sudan or places like that, or want to be generous to their neighbors, that you do nothing to squash that. They're going to grow up. They're going to ask questions and be skeptical. But don't squash that native and natural generosity that they have in their hearts.
Announcement this morning, script is available to be purchased right after Mass.
I'd like to thank you again for allowing me to be with you. It's always a great joy to come out of the administrative offices and into a parish. So thank you for allowing me to be here to worship you this morning. As Vicar General, I represent the Bishop very directly. It's part of my role in the diocese. And on his behalf, I thank you and I welcome you. I thank you and I extend his blessings and his prayers to you. He prays every day for you, both at his Eucharistic celebrations and at the Liturgy of the Hours, in which he holds the entire church in his care before our Lord and Savior. So know of his great prayers for you and best wishes and blessings for you. I encourage you also to continue to pray for him. It's a large role and it takes a lot of support to do that. As moderator of the Curia, I thank you for the intentions that you have, particularly today in your general intercessions, and that's the intentions for the success of the Diocesan Annual Appeal. The offices that I manage as moderator of the Curia are directly supported by the generosity of people such as you who give generously to the Diocesan Annual Appeal. The offices that are there, to just name a few, buildings and grounds, catechesis and evangelization, family life, Catholic schools, all those other offices as well, would not be in existence if it were not for you, would not be able to offer their ministry. I also sit on the board of Catholic Charities, who is also a great receiver of your generosity so that it can clothe the naked and house the homeless and care for those who are less fortunate than ourselves and to keep the adoption services going. So on their behalf, I also thank you. So just know that you're greatly appreciated for all the generosity that you show in support of the broader church.